This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. In April of 2015, the Word Temple Poetry Series had the pleasure of hosting Paul Hoover reading the poems of Mexican poet Maria Baranda and the wonderful Michael Palmer. I'm going to air as much of that reading as I can right now, so this introduction is going to be short and sweet. We're going to start with Paul Hoover. Let's go now to the Word Temple Poetry Series. All right, Paul Hoover is making, I think, his fourth visit to the Word Temple Poetry Series tonight. He is a very favored poet here. In the past, he's read from his own books of poetry as well as translations. He's the author of over a dozen collections of poetry, including Totem and Shadow, New and Selected Poems, Edge and Fold, and Sonnet 56. He translated the poems of Friedrich Hölderlin with Maxine Chernoff. You read that one here, too, didn't you? Yeah, and we did a radio show. And with Nguyen Do, translated Black Dog, Black Night, contemporary Vietnamese poetry, and Beyond the Court Gate, selected poems of Nguyen Trai. And you also read from that book here with Nguyen Do. Last year, he won the Pan America Translation Fund Award from a field of 120 applicants for his translation of Nightmare Running on a Meadow of Absolute Light by Maria Baranda. And tonight we're celebrating that work. Pan America says one of Mexico's leading poets of the generation, born in the 1960s, and a powerful presence in all of Latin American poetry, Baranda is best known for her sweeping and incisive long poems. Her cry is resoundingly of sea, sponge, ant, and prayer, as related in rapture. Hoover deftly captures the drama of her cadences in Spanish. Baranda was born in Mexico City in 1962 and is the author of The Gardens of Enchantment, Fiction of Heaven, and Arcadia, among others. She has won several literary awards, and now for the first time we can enjoy her poetry thanks to Paul Hoover. Unfortunately, the book, their collection, has not been put into a book or published as a book yet. But I have asked him to keep me informed. It's sure to be picked up. And as soon as we know who's publishing it and when, I'm going to let you all know. But right now, let's just enjoy the poems of Maria Baranda. And here's Paul Hoover.
Thank you so much, Catherine. It's great to be back here, and good evening. And it's a pleasure to read with Michael Palmer, and an honor. I'm going to begin with, Maria and I became friends in Argentina in around 2007 and corresponded quite a bit and collaborated on some things. She translated two of my books into Spanish, and they were published in Mexico City and in Caracas. And we also together translated San Juan de la Cruz, the great mystic poet, which was a difficult job because there are dictionary. You have to go into ancient dictionaries to find out, find some of those words. So I want to read a poem that I wrote from a book called Poems in Spanish that was written in English as if in Spanish. So because I so admire the Spanish cadence and tone and warmth and weight. Beautiful stuff. So this is called Historia de Lisboa. Quédate en silencio, una sombra canta. Una sombra en un pared amarilla canta sobre el tiempo. Y un hombre como el tiempo se recarga contra una pared azul. Pero es un sombra que canta intensamente en la noche. That's Maria's translation of my English that was like Spanish. So there we are. Now we're up to speed. So I'll read my poem in English, then I get to read one of my own poems. That's the trick. And then I'll read from her work. Lisbon Story. Be quiet. A shadow is singing. A shadow on a yellow wall is singing about time, and a man like time is leaning against a blue wall, but it's a shadow singing her heart out in the night. Beyond this room in the world, the sounds of the world are passing. All lives, all cities are full of sound. A woman sings of them. The river and her song are cutting into the world. A shadow is moving its mouth, lyric to distraction, a lyric separation of world and time, thought and mind, shadow on the wall, yellow, where the blue man listens. This house on the street dark, this slant street in the city, small as streets are small, a sound of birds flying and a sound of paper, a sound of sharpening knives, quick, and dogs lifting their legs, thick, and the girl who drops her doll. The blue man listens to the world making itself, a shoe making distance, click, and snow barely surviving on the ground it has chosen, gone. A world as shadow is passing. But in the yellow room, a handsome woman is singing, ending, and the room and its sounds are dark. So, Maria, I translated two books. I'm going to read a small part of the first book, which is called Narar. I translated that as to tell. And her work could be described as kind of surging and appetitive. Like, you remember the Pac-Man? Yeah, it wants language. It wants to chew language. It goes after it. So, to tell. And there's an epigraph by Góngora, the great Baroque poet of Spain. Her horrendous voice, not her inner sorrow. A cry, a single cry, just a cry to the open air, cry of porpoise or dolphin, of incandescent fish by the water, cry of the sea that breaks and repeats, that empties, and in the time of salt says everywhere what it says, that swells, that glows, a cry, a single cry, just a cry, of the blue inconceivable sky, that repeats, that advances, that grazes among the algae, the fetid rumor of the a fetid rumor of the brackish, a providential cry in the voice of air, an unsustainable rhythm in the throat, a cry that knots itself in symphonic circles of joy, a terrible cry that announces the first death that stands on precarious feet and dismantles shadows and grumbling, a cry that must choose, for between the walls the liquid deepens. The wall is a cardinal point, an agonizing smile in the punctual sweetness of the one who is drowning. A cry disbanded in a garden with thickets, a dream of blue light for the birds, a cry that in itself is the size of the sea and lives at the center of rapture, and with each step it yields to the delirium of a sponge that inflates in sweat and gives glory to the time of silent prayers. A cry is the caiman's vigil, the unleashed whip of an ant, the fan of, yes, the same immaculate air of an inhospitable grudge that bends, the cry that smells of salt, a wild beast dry in the dusky collapse of your herd. The cry distilled from minutes marks the world that is world forever, in an open moment where never passes nothing and everything dissolves, hurling itself to the bottom. Nothingness is reason falling, finally its emptiness, its bend in the road most refreshing, when the tree is erected in delirium in order to sing from its purgatory its novice illusions vertiginous. So that's a sample of Narar. It's a 40-page book, a kind of chapbook published in small edition by Ediciones Sin Nombre of Mexico City. And her new book has a Great title. I wish I had thought of it. Nightmare Running on a Meadow of Absolute Light. Yegua nocturna corriendo en un prado de luz absoluta. And it has a quote from Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz, "The world enlightened and I awakened." And this book-length poem contains quotes from Sor Juana in bold face, but we don't have time to work that through. "And nevertheless here, almost unsuspected, tired of seeing the voices stripped from the land, another earth, other lips of another cutting, the modesty of the flowers that torment, how much brightness looms at the edge of everything, and therefore what's not known, and I, why don't you know of me? Otherworldly, delirious, unapproachable at a point pertaining to a named pendulum in the eye, uncorked, covered in dust, placed, removed, and discarded. It burns and declines alone, infinitely alone, pounded, dismembered, broken, despised, and deflated. It arises in the shadows, nightmare running on a meadow of absolute light." And when I ask myself, who could be persuaded seeing that sonorous sky, the open breach in the wall, the movement in its measure, and the field in a fabric of herbs sustained in its membranes, alone, so alone, exhaling a new punctuation. A long cry in the aggravated night, forced to see a glimmer of what was, telling yourself the same, bad, worse, ill-fated. And I think about this disproportion of thought, in the astonishment before a pause, a compass stopped on a non-existent phone or on a CD, timorous and solicitous, a now in its intent to be flame, between even darker lips, when the fish, you said, were twice speechless, always in the cavern where the sun opens disobediently, a defense against the darkness or a simple opaque form, and you saw among atoms and molecules, dreamed. Now a prose poem. You briefly switch on a galaxy and touch your childhood sea. The world is a dark road where night is the voice of what you say. At the sound of water, you think of celestial birds, clouds, and a bit of sun in a story that begins without words. Because I look far away, fallen to the bottom, caught in the mud, hidden in slow, solitary thickness. Because I say fire, and it rushes from my mouth in flames. Because I name you now as then, and the birds are more fragile, and the clouds no longer exist. Because I see you on the path of high stone that imagines high meadows, diverse, and the inhospitable matter where articles in the same reflection walk and talk and evaporate, and because everything is a page of hunger, where you reconcile the impossible, and only the single sun in syllables of the advent, because the night, this night, night vitreous and tiny, the most furious and insistent, which oxidizes itself as lightning with this high form, has a putrid empire with its eyes wide open, its field of aromas in cages, its cry like a mean mule that never forgets, no, and that it is there together with us in order to die a little from time to time, and with the sleep that is night, that night, unique and pyramidal and completely yours." I'm going to pause for a minute. It's a lot of language. Okay, another prose poem, then I'll read a couple of pages, and then we'll see. "The dogs of night break out of their dreams together. They lose their eyes. You clarify reality with the laughter of the waters. Then the world goes missing to ride in a single wave, like a lament in the burning arousal of cholera. And what I hear of the style in which the wind howls over those old flowery faces of clay, I think of what this city reveals and hastily burns in my hands, in that same history corrupted, where I gulp it down blindly in dark streets of ink and iron, traced in the dust that roars alone, when I see it plainly, and I am soon ready to take slow sips among the rats and garbage dumps, centuries ago where you sang and I feel it, her crush on you in my throat like a cry, and stings in its orphanhood of mud and presents itself and me, dislocated, while the dogs lick saltpeter from the dead walls and roll tin plate cans kicked by the laughter of children. Its rattle brings up in me a flower of rapid water in their drains and leaves me beneath scabby heaven, listening to its gravel, the color of vegetation, its separate arms extending a dry cry, slow in the repentance of fire.
This is Catherine Hastings. You've been listening to Paul Hoover reading the work of Maria Baranda that he translated. At this point of his reading, we asked him to read some of his own work. So let's go back to Paul Hoover reading his own poetry.
Okay, El Molino. I happen to live on Molino Avenue in Mill Valley. So that's Mill Valley, Molino, Mill Mill. This was published in the Mexico City newspaper Milenio. You know, we have lots of poems in newspapers here, right? Yeah, I'd always check the poetry section first, then the comics. You know. El Molino, the mill. This is the evening when a bird nests in a hat left in the street by a flying man. A man of worlds and heat, of vellum and fog and sculptures that lurk when we're not looking, this is the evening. This is the moment when traffic passes as I have taught it to pass, as I have learned the way, this is the moment. This is the place where snow was invented. This is the town it falls on, consisting of three houses with plastic lights in the doorway. A man who touches his woman as she likes to be touched, no matter how warm, always snow, and the hand that turns the world, this is the place. This is the life that keeps me awake at night, its distances and skin, and this is time with its foot in a crack, unable to move yet passing. This is the life. This is the hour when the crime was committed. This is the first cause watching. This is the river drowning in a filthy shadow washing its hands. This is the hour. This is the little fish eating the big one. This is the man who lives by the railroad tracks. This is the train passing. This is the mill where grain was turned. This is the grain unfinished. And this is the empty bed of the stream that used to turn the wheel. This is the mill of absence. Thank you. And I will hurry and read one more. And it's No Te Mates. And it's after a Portuguese poet, Carlos Drummond de Andrade. Or do you say Andrade?
Andrade.
No Te Mates. Don't kill yourself. Don't kill yourself, Paul. The world is angry for only a moment, and then it loves you again. Even its perfect indifference is love and no love in equal doses. Don't contemplate some ending strapped to the hood of a car. Don't swallow too many donuts. Stop weeping like an ostrich and stalking the boundary fences. Stop batting your eyelashes. Everyone knows you lost the big one. Forget about it, my boy. Everyone loses the big one. Who do you think you are? Your life could be a painting, the triumph of inertia. The shadows flow in the wrong direction, but the sun is in its sky. Don't kill yourself with a shovel we'll have to bury you with. Don't even look at that gun. Your babies are still growing. Don't disappoint them with the last cliche of your life. Go play in the sea with your clothes on, or with no clothes if you wish. There are plenty of secrets left to share with perfect strangers, so live bravely and die exhausted, both hands in the till. It's true we remember little of what you said or did, but this will improve with time. Old wine is the best. The needle will find its thread. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Paul. I could literally sit and listen to you read for hours. Well, it was wonderful. It's good to hear your own work again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it gives me a very special pleasure to introduce our next poet, Michael Palmer. He's reading at Word Temple for the first time tonight, and he's the author of more books of poetry than I have time to list here. Lots. Some of them are Madman with Broom, Selected Poems with Chinese Translations by Hunte Huang, Oxford University Press, Thread, New Directions, and Company of Moths, also from New Directions, which was shortlisted for the Canadian Griffin Poetry Prize. Codes Appearing, Poems 1979 to 1988, The Promises of Glass, The Lion Bridge, Selected Poems 1972 to 1995, and there are many others. He is a very busy, prolific poet. His new book of poems is called The Laughter of the Sphinx, and it's coming out from New Directions this year. Unfortunately, it's not available tonight, but that's okay. We're going to hear him read some poems from that book anyway. Palmer is also the author of a prose work, The Danish Notebook. He's translated work from French, Russian, and Portuguese, and has taken part in collaborations with painters and dancers, including with the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company. He edited and contributed translations to Nothing the Sun Could Not Explain, 20 Contemporary Brazilian Poets, and that was published by Sun and Moon Press. His honors include two grants from the National Endowment for the Arts, a Leela Wallace Reader's Digest Writers Award, a Guggenheim Foundation Fellowship, the Shelley Memorial Prize from the Poetry Society of America, the Arts and Letters Prize in Literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and a Wallace Stevens Award. His work has been translated into over 30 languages. So please give a very special welcome to Michael Palmer.
I'm going to mainly read from a book of mine that published a couple of years ago called Thread, and then a few things from the manuscript that will be published this winter. But I will also read one poem from a book called Company of Moths. The reason for it is that Paul read a poem after Carlos Drummond de Andrade, a great Brazilian poet, wonderful poet. And this poem was also written after Andrade, so I thought, or Drummond, as he's called. So I'll begin with that. Your diamond shoe. Don't write poems about what's going on. Murderers and liars, dreams and desires, they're always going on. Leave them outside the poem. Don't describe your sad-eyed summer home or wide-eyed winter home. Don't write about being homeless or your home away from home. Don't talk about language. Don't talk about loss. Don't mention truth or beauty or your grandpa's bones. No one wants to know how your father, brother, lover deducted himself. Razor, rope, or gun. What's the difference? Whisper nothing of the snow on the Contra Scarp, nothing of moths, their fluttering arcs, or the towers, how we watched them fall. don't write at all. The rhetorical device there is, I think, called apophasis, where you actually deny what writing about something and you actually, therefore, are writing about. Poets are liars, anyway. This is called Red Sea. I'll read a few now from Thread. Red Sea, and it was inspired by the great Russian Jewish prose writer and chronicler of the revolution, Isaac Babel. He had a collection called Red Cavalry, and he was eventually, of course, like all the good writers, snuffed by Stalin. But the strange thing about Red Cavalry is that he rode as a chronicler with the Cossacks. Now, the Cossacks were, of course, marauders, something we're familiar with today as well. But they were also quite particularly anti-Semitic marauders. They didn't just pick out Jews, but they specialized. And so as a Jewish writer during the revolution, it was very peculiar to my mind that he had decided somewhat suicidally to ride among these people as their chronicler. He called himself the Master of Silence. I asked the Master of Silence why he rode horseback with the Cossacks, and he said, to peer into the eye of heaven, perhaps through the eyes of death. I asked the Master of Silence, a Jew, what he saw as he rode, and he spoke of street lamps and taverns and indolence, watermills and ceaseless rains, bright cherries in heaps, churches in flames, slaughtered oxen and racing clouds, bent women gathered by a well. So daybreak and nightfall and my silence, no heaven awaits. Those are also his words, no heaven awaits. And I'll just pick out a few somewhat randomly. Madman with Broom. A number of these poems are from the shining years of the George W. Bush administration, involving our international triumphs as well as domestic. And this, I guess, is a bit of an allegory about that. I have a friend, we have a little summer place on the East Coast, and I have a friend married to my wife's cousin. He's actually a great painter. And we have a little sort of cluster of inexpensive houses. And every morning, early in the morning, crows would land in one of the trees on the property and make an incredible racket, and he would come out and wave his broom at them. And they would all fly up in the air and then settle back down again when Mr. Crazy went into the house. But he would later boast, do you see what I did to the crows? They thought I had a gun. I took care of them. Anyway, this struck me as something of an allegory of our international relations at the time. Madman with Broom. The realist crows return at earliest morning, and the madman with broom, madman in his nightshirt with a broom, he too returns. He thinks to rouse the crows from the mulberry boughs, by jabbing and swirling his broom, by crazily twirling his broom in the wet summer air, and hurling curses skyward beyond the boughs and the crows towards the fading gods among the fading stars. But the realist crows know it is only a man in a nightshirt after dawn, that the broom is a broom, and that his cries are nothing more then words and half-words the heavy air will swallow. They rise anyway from the tree as best to quiet him and let morning be morning. Soon enough they'll return again by twos and threes, settling among the spreading limbs, their laughter the same before and after.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Let's return now to Michael Palmer.
This is called Hiddenness. Kathy, my wife, and I were in Japan. I had been invited to Tokyo for the International Festival of Poetry and Dance, along with also the dance company I work with, so I was sort of wearing two hats. We also went to Kyoto, where a sort of film was being made about me, and went to an extraordinary temple there in the hills. One of my guides, my Japanese translator, pointed to a ideogram on the wall in one of the rooms, and he said, "Do you know what that means?" And I said, "No." And he said, "It was made by the emperor, 17th century, 18th century, and it means hiddenness, which, among other things, which speaks to so many things in Japanese culture, the layers of discovery you make in the architecture, the layers of things that are withheld and are revealed by being withheld. Hiddenness, Kansai Plains. To enter the temple, we had to pick the locks, put off our shoes, sing to sleep the clocks watching us, peel your skin back from the top and pass through the chamber of clouds, of peonies, elms, and pale herons, of emperors long dead, therein assembled, the silent, the wild-eyed, the meek and the violent, the awkward and the graceful dead, therein assembled. Entering the temple, the rain will follow and come to rest there above your head. It will lave memory, it is said. Then ask its one question about the hours, their parts. A space of time, might we say, that a glimpse will not contain. Count the silent stones if you can, and the ringing drops. Extraordinary, actually, while we were at this temple, a sudden rainstorm arrived, and it was as if the temple had been, with this residence temple, had been designed for rain, because suddenly all of these places, these things that gathered the rain, we should learn from this actually, in our drought, came alive, and water came bristling down and into the ponds and so on, and it was a whole extraordinary music, which I wouldn't have obviously been aware of if we hadn't had a sudden, beautiful, brief storm. Bridge of Bones. A child, this was actually a dream, somewhat of a dream poem, coming from a dream I had after the time in Japan, when at one point we were in a park in, what's the name of the, with that little bridge?
Which one?
After going to the Museum Island. And
In
Japan, yeah.
Katsura?
Katsura. Yeah. I tend to have trouble with heights. And I went to cross a bridge, a small bridge, and suddenly I started to tremble. And I almost had to get down on my knees. Now, the bridge was about 3 feet above the water. but it was rattling and so on. And I think that's what generated this part of this dream. Bridge of Bones. I made it across, but I was not well at the end. A child is running across a bridge of bones. A woman calls to him, but he doesn't listen. A tall woman with flowing hair. He is chasing an unknown creature. Dark and small, the water is rising, skimming the bridge's underside. She keeps calling him by a private name as he crosses the bridge in the waning light. The bridge's bones are oblong, hollow, bleached white, and lie side by side lengthwise, a flute of sorts. In the wind, where the beast, The child and her cries disappear there among the cypresses, the cedars and ferns at Bridge's End. In another life, she is the lover of the child. She lets her dress fall from her shoulders, calls him by a private name, feels the singing bones beneath her feet. I'll read a few poems from both the new book, The Laughter of the Sphinx, and this book have an opening section, selections of relatively shorter poems, and then they close with a sequence. The sequence in thread is, in fact, called thread. It began... I was thinking we're coming to the end of the Age of Bush and into the next one. I was thinking about our failure to atone for the crimes of war during the Bush years, among the hierarchy. Our failure to some degree to have the grace to confront legally and otherwise the war crimes. And in part, this was inspired by a great poet named Raul Zurita, who an Argentinian poet who lived through the terrible time of the disappeared and the fascist regime, where people were disappeared. They were dropped from airplanes into the desert and into the water. And Raul, extraordinary poet who now has several volumes in English, after a period of time found he was partially very much a victim of this regime, the fascist regime, the generals. And he found himself beginning to write about this in the most extraordinary fashion. So part of it is that, but it's also addressed to a number of writers who have been meaningful to me over time. It begins at the Miró Museum in Barcelona when Kathy and I were spending time there and in Basque country. Suddenly I saw this work by Juan Miró, the great artist. The museum was designed by José Luis Serre, and a beautiful, modest museum, unlike some of these megalomaniacal catastrophes we have now. A homage to Miró and a homage to everything he stood for, again, against the fascist regime. And this piece of Miró's is called Nighthawk and Sunbird, and it was the beginning. Nighthawk and Sunbird, beauty of the world, beauty of the world. How can one write beauty of the world? Fumbled for each other in the dark, familiar, unfamiliar, the touch of watery air, walls, weight of watery air, cards scattered across a table, game of chance they had played. This one, excuse me, mentions Alyosha, who's Alyosha Parshikov, a wonderful Russian poet who died a few years ago. I guess these are sort of elegies, too, for many of the departed. Wonderful Russian poet who translated my work, and I translated his work. So, Alyosha, maybe it is true that we live in perhaps. Perhaps the earth, perhaps the sky, chemical winds, auroras, tides, chalk hills and blistered pines and the microtonal bells. And those who swallow ink, the ringers of bells, perhaps they will inherit the bogs and salt marshes, the swamp grass and samphire, jacket with torn pockets, shredded cuffs. Will inherit the seafoam, the dust, the ferrous mud that reabsorbs us. Mahmoud Darwish, great Palestinian poet, who also enters into this company. From the mercury fountain, Mahmoud spills a stream, echo of things, sun to stone speaking, cicada to poppy, not milk of paradise, no river of stars in the dark, just the bent wheel of days, meaningless ripples in the heat. And then Raul being Raul Zurita, I said Argentinian, I meant Chilean poet, but they both had their terror regimes. But he was under Pinochet. From the eyeless mountains, Raoul fall, voices beneath voices. We hear the hawthorn, the penstemon, the goldenrod. Even here, hawthorn and goldenrod, shadows of wheeling turns, mountains then sea, sea swallowing mountains. We hear, and we hear the tongues of days, names melting into sea, wave mouths, indifferent air. Even here, lodestar, lexicon, labyrinthos. Along the corridors of the invisible world, Raoul, gardeners raise such flowers as need no light, such flowers watered by voices as need no eyes to be seen. It is the role of the lovers to set fire to the book. In the palm garden at night, they set fire to the book and read by the light of the book. Syllables, particles of glass, they pass back and forth in the dark. The two, invisible, transparent in the book, their voices muffled by the book. It is the role of the lovers to be figures of the book, the illegible book, changing as the pages turn, now joined, now clawing the fruit from each other's limbs, now interlaced, now tearing at throat and vein, then splayfoot, then winged, then ember, as the music of the book, rustling through the palms, instructs. We must count in Babylon. Surely in Babylon we must count, count the days and the dead, the chambers of the palace, its stones, its steps, its flaring lamps, must count the clouds, the petals of the flowers, the hours, we must count the hours as they pass, so slowly for the young, so swiftly for the withered masters of this place, ardent assassins of speech hidden away. Surely in Babylon we must count the gardens tended, the towers raised by slaves in this city, soon to be dust. Count the days and the dead. Must we count the dust? And then I'll just skip to the a final poem in the sequence. Chimera, sightless stars have colonized the meadow. Chimera, helicopters are birthing their young into the waves. Language of the waves, chimera, language of the owl, silent petrels by the salt shore, the plover repeating its note. Saw the singer in flames by the shore, watched her swallow her song. Nowness, in Neverland she sang, watched the palace disappear beneath the sea while a later world sailed overhead. Endless amusements of the cruise ship with no origin or port of call. Saw the singer in that ink-dark dream. Neverness and nowness she sang. Beauty of the world, broken world, she sang. Chimera, such words the fire offered her. And I'll just read a few from this new collection, The Laughter of the Sphinx. Idiot Song. By permission of the sun, the Arctic chill descends. In a teacup, a storm. In a sentence, the logician's fate. And poetry, an enemy of the state of things. By the roadside, in a ditch, or beneath a buckled bridge. Now it is our wounds that make love in the streets. Wounds hastily dressed with vetiver and mint, while slender poplars bend amidst the violent winds. What is your name, mindless sun? What idiot song will mark your end? The Laughter of the Sphinx. This in part comes from a brief stay in Egypt, principally in Cairo, before the unrevolution that followed, the unspring, after the spring, before the spring was unsprung, and everything returned to the way it was. But we were given, my wife and I, and then two friends who were in the audience, were given the extraordinary privilege of actually going down into the pit where the Sphinx sat. And then, of course, not long thereafter, the following year, Tahrir Square, the uprising, the fires, and so on, which led to nothing, it would appear. The laughter of the Sphinx. The laughter of the Sphinx caused my eyes to bleed. The blood from my eyes flowed onto that ancient map of sand. Ridiculous as I am, often have I been drawn to such lands, rippling oceans of silence and the distant enigmatic glow of burning shops and burning scrolls, overseen by river birds and mitred beasts, sad-eyed scholars and mournful scribes, omniscient ibises, and in the dust-clogged air, the laughter of the Sphinx, endlessly riddling, endlessly echoing, loosing the blood's engulfing tide. Tomb of Aimé Césaire. Aimé Césaire died at the, 199 or something when he died? Great Caribbean poet. Lived until just a couple of years ago. He was part of an extraordinary revolution in consciousness among the Caribbean peoples as they found their way into an anti-colonial independence movement. I mourned a person who turned out not to be dead. Of that, what is to be said? Surgical noise of the city, sentence and song under earth. I wept for something lost, a dawn or a dusk or a thought, a thing that couldn't be bought. Sun, throat cut, woman removing a glove, and the body at once naked and veiled, waiting and waiting for what? Coma Berenices above the bay, sea rack beneath, speech of the bone and of the polychrome wing, speech of the leaf descending and of the rubble in a ruined field. Words have their lives apart. I mourned a person who turned out not to have died between a feral sky and a flooded shore where a wave was frozen in midair. When you reach a certain age in America, all sorts of, besides your own relentless decay, you are seen as a terrific business opportunity for all sorts of people who want to manage your decay. And at one point, after I turned 70, I started getting phone calls from some wonderful, enthusiastic gentleman who urged me, was a recording, of course, a drone, urged me to buy a button that I could push when I fell down. And he kept calling and calling, and since he was a drone, I couldn't tell him what I thought of him. But I did write this poem called Falling Down in America, inspired by his narrative. Every 3 seconds, someone over 65 falls down in America. Our records show that you are over 65 and may therefore have already fallen down in America, maybe more than once. Perhaps upon entering your bath, you slipped and cracked open your skull and subsequently drowned in a pool of blood. If so, disregard this notice. Perhaps while gazing at the sea distractedly one day, your balance failed and the waves carried you away toward the irradiated swells of Fukushima. If so, never mind. The flesh has already peeled from your limbs and your eyes have melted in their sockets, in which case you should disregard this notice. We need hardly remind you that many of your friends and relatives, perhaps beloved uncles, aunts, cousins, your seven brothers and sisters, parents assuredly, may have succumbed in some manner to the fateful equation of gravity and age. In addition, it is likely that your investments recently caved, and as a result from the shock you fainted upon the cheap Mexican tiles of your dining room floor, and days later awoke among impersonal professionals, masked and clad in white and addressing you as if you were a child. If so, you know now that you are utterly alone in this life. Please favor us with a reply regarding our one-time offer, which will soon expire. I'll just read two poems from the closing sequence of the new book, which is called Still, S-T-I-L-L, a cantata or nada for Sister Satan. And it's meant as a kind of, it's meant as a sequence of works that could be literally put into performance if a composer came along and wanted to work with them. There's no particular sequence to it as it stands. I have a note in the text that says that there would be anybody who wanted to work with it should be free to use repeats and erase things and change things around and so on. The child, first learning the words, wonders what comes between the words, and learning the words, she tries to recall what came before, a ringing or whistling or roaring, a kind of chorus, perhaps, as of wind over water, like the water here, near enough to see, that's mysteriously called the sound. Are there sounds between the words where all feels asleep and still? Maybe she laughs at the thought that the words breathe too, and that the breathing turns right there in the air between the words. This is from my grandson, who coincidentally, or maybe, no, not at all coincidentally, as I was writing this sequence, was coming into language as a two-year-old child and discovering the words for this and the words for that, and trying to figure out what the stupid adults could understand, because children can speak 30 languages, and we can only speak one or two, and so they do this elaborate filtering process. They say some Chinese stuff, and then when we don't get it, they switch to Russian and eventually find their way to our American English. And the children sing, knowing and unknowing, in the space of the field that is opening, in the child's slow time, the rhymes of the day and the rhymes of night, the rhymes of still water and those of sudden fire, of the lamb, the dolphin, and the unicorn, and the white spider constructing a cloud. Say apple for the first time. Say yellow apple, wagon, plum, seahorse, flying horse, river horse. And taste mint. Say mint. Watch the lantern light as it plays across the furred walls of a barn, the curves of a rutted path. Words, so many, made for ears, for eyes. So many eyes, say I, say cyan, violet, wintergreen beneath your feet, the simple words as they vanish among the white oaks, echoing shadows, the pawpaws, the sassafras with lobed leaves, the spirals of summer thought, sing the secrets of the stream. Maybe I'll just stop there. Thank you.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you've been listening to Michael Palmer reading mostly from his book, Threads, This reading took place at the Word Temple Poetry Series in April of 2015. Before him, recorded on the same evening, you heard the poet Paul Hoover reading his translations of poetry by Mexican poet Maria Baranda. The name of her book is Nightmare Running on a Meadow of Absolute Light. And we're hoping to see this book come out very soon with Hoover's translations. Before signing off, I want to let you know that we've been having some wonderful readings from the anthology Digging Our Poetic Roots, Poems from Sonoma County. The kickoff reading was on Saturday, August 29th at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. We followed that up with a reading at the Cloverdale Performing Arts Center. And the next and last scheduled reading takes place on Thursday, October 15th at the Healdsburg Center for the Arts. That will be at 7 o'clock p.m., and I hope you can all make it. This anthology has been receiving raves ever since that reading in Sebastopol, and it really deserves it. There are so many fine poets living right here in Sonoma County. Just some of the names you will recognize, perhaps, are Sonoma County Poet Laureate Emerita Terry Arrett, Gregory W. Randall, Janine Cannon, Dave Setter, Lise Leninsky, who is one of the editors from New York, Michelle Wing, Jody Hoddle, Clara Rosmarda, Andrea Granahan, Sandy Eastoak, Jean Wong, Gary McLaughlin, Hannah Maggiora, Iris Jamal Dunkel, Thomas Zimmer, and the list goes on and on. David Beckman is in here. Amy Trussell is in here. There are all kinds of wonderful poets. So again, that's Thursday, October 15th at 7 p.m. at the Healdsburg Center for the Arts. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. If you have any comments or questions, please contact me at khastings@wordtemple.com. Thanks for listening.